It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the Newcastle Natter. I'm Paul Doolan. There is no Fergus Craig this week, but there is Dave Watson. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Paul. Hi. I miss Fergus.
Dad's gone.
I just miss him so much. I just don't know when he's going to be back.
Fergus, for the listeners, is in Florida at the moment, presumably at Mar-a-Lago, trying to get more, more far-right funding for his next scheme.
He's got a similar hairstyle to Trump.
Yeah. I think, is it a coincidence Fergus leaves the country and we win a game by 2 goals for the first time in recent memory?
Well, of all of us, he takes the most pleasure of our, like, what did he call it? Punctured hubris.
Yeah.
So when he's not around, maybe the team, you know, can express themselves a bit more without that fear of his criticism.
He essentially saying the Newcastle team have gone, that fucker's gone. Let's put it in performance. It could happen.
The shackles are off.
A performance, Dave. Newcastle 3, Everton 1.
So it's like, it's our best performance under Eddie Howe. And individually, I think a few of the players had their best performances for us. Certainly, like, I mean, I'm not going to count the debutants, but like Willock was fucking brilliant. Trippier had his best game, even though he'd already set a high standard. Saint-Maximin, best game under Eddie Howe. Like, I could go through them one by one, but let's talk about the first 2 goals. Because
it was quite a bizarre pair of goals. So it was, Holgate. So the first one was a Lascelles own goal assisted by Holgate. And then about 90 seconds later, a Holgate own goal assisted by Lascelles. I was so nervous before this game started. It was the most sinking feeling I've had in ages when that goal went in. Because it, I don't know about you, my nerves were shot about 3 days before this game.
I
couldn't function.
So I'd gone through the almost like, because I've had like a habit checking myself before. So I don't get too excited or too nervous about something.
Just like balls in the hand, kind of check yourself.
Yeah. No, but just like things like. So when I first bought this house, I was like, okay, let's just not get too excited about the bid that we've put in and don't worry if we don't get it and it's all fine. And then when we did get it, I was able to enjoy it. And, you know, I try and ride that middle ground and not get too excited or too depressed. This, I was like, if we win, great, but there's no pressure. There's plenty of other games going on. Twitter was going like, this is it. This is the pivotal game of the season. After the fact, I can now say, this was the pivotal game of our season.
It was, but as well, after going behind, you sort of, in the past, that's the sort of game where the heads would have dropped. I think it was quite, Kieran Trippier's role in not letting that happen looked huge to me. He was the one straight away. I mean, he seemed to be after we'd equalised as well, he seemed to be the one telling, he just seems to spend half his time on the pitch telling players to calm down. And the other half just flying into tackle. I don't think I've liked a player like Trippier for a long time.
He's I think I saw some like fan cam or something, and a guy said he's been going to the game, like going to watch Newcastle for 50 years, and Kieran Trippier is the best right back he's ever seen, even though he's only played like how many games? Like 4 or 5 games for us now.
That is very, very hard on Emil Kraft.
The one thing I wanted to mention is that I was obviously watching the game, but I also had Twitter on at the same time. And one of the journalists said that the reaction to the opening goal wasn't like resignation. It was defiance from the crowd. The crowd almost were like, you're not going to fucking spoil today. We are going to have a good game of football now. And they roared him back. I've no doubt that Kieran Trippier picking up the ball and telling the two players who were, you know, nestled in the back of the net, get up, let's go, come on. And like you say, like, I think it's the shortest gap between own goals being scored for like the opposite side, like the two teams, the shortest gap between them in Premier League history.
That's huge. That's a huge.
That's massive. that's amazing.
The other player who I think is, we have to give a lot of praise for controlling the atmosphere and making sure nerves didn't get carried away. Weird, I do mean this as well, is Jordan Pickford. I think if you think how nervous that crowd could have been, but there was one focal point to just scream at for the first half. I think if it hadn't been for him, there would have been a lot more nervous energy carried around that stadium.
It's because they could smell blood. Because every time Pickford's played at Stamford Park, he's had a shitter. There's just something. Actually, there was one game where Everton dropped him for the Newcastle game, and that was the one game that was played behind closed doors.
Maybe just the stadium. And I think some of the best trolling of a player I've ever seen. Someone dressed as a dinosaur behind him.
His sister with his little arms. There were consistent chance of he's only got little hands, little arms, you know. But Pickford was the focal point for our ire until Dele Alli came on the pitch, and then there were two villains of the piece, and because he was just spoiling for a fight.
Well, have you seen the rumours about after the game?
About Joe Linton.
Allegedly, he sort of picked a fight with Joe Linton, who floored him. And then Chris Wood tried to break it up. Dele Alli had a go at Chris Wood, who then floored him again. I think that might be sort of Twitter hyperbole, but I really hope that's true. He just seems like a proper... Yeah. At least he used to be a talented arsehole. Now he just seems like an arsehole.
But I wanted to mention that our equaliser, the corner from Trippier was genuine quality, and the movement for Lascelles to get that essentially a free header, that was great as well. I think that's something that I was hoping for from Howe, because a lot of people spoke about how good he is at organising set pieces, and I think we saw it in that equaliser. It was really well done, and Lascelles is unlucky in a way that it came back off the crossbar.
Yeah. And imagine a 6'7" Dan Byrne in there as well. We do look like a set-piece threat now.
Yeah, because, I mean, you haven't just got Dan Byrne, Lascelles, Chris Wood. You've also, like, you've got players who can be a threat from set pieces by occupying space in the 18-yard box and just outside, because we've got threats like Ryan Fraser and Jonjo Shelvey from the edge of the box. You've got players like Joe Willock who can attack. I'm getting carried away.
One player who I think it is fair to say wasn't a goal threat in one specific incident is Joe Linton. Which we can laugh now, but at 1-1, you just think this just isn't going to happen. So if you've somehow not seen it, I don't know how anyone can't have done. The ball comes through a crowd to Joe Linton, basically unmarked in the penalty area. He can't quite get his foot in. He sort of stumbles, kicks it into his own head, and then the chance.
It took me a few times to realise he kicks the floor, and in so doing, it skips the ball up, and he's already falling over, so he clocks himself in the head. But Jesus, that kid. If he just stepped out of the way, Chris Wood was there to put it away. Gift it to the keeper. He had a few chances. I don't think he was particularly unlucky with the offside goal, because he was comfortably offside. He had a couple of opportunities that he just put into Pickford's hands. But he held up the ball okay. Like, I'm not.
Yeah.
I said ages ago that he's a bang average Premier League striker, and he's proving that. You know, he's not.
What the Everton game showed for Chris Wood, it's not so much just about goals with him. Like, if Callum Wilson has an off day, then we don't really have a threat. If Chris Wood might not hit the target, but still wins a lot of aerial duels, makes space for players genuinely running in behind him. And now we've got Fraser. Like, Fraser was in, for the second goal, Fraser's in the 6-yard box. When's the last time we had a winger in the middle of the 6-yard box?
No. And he wasn't alone in there. There were, because a couple of things. Credit to Willock for chasing down the ball and then having the wherewithal to give it across to find Wood to give it to Joe Linton drives a little bit into the box and then releases some maximum. That burst of pace to accelerate even more than, he's already gone fast. And then to get the ball in, and I think it was Wood and Fraser in the centre. And if anybody deserves one bobbled in his arse, it was Wood. But Fraser took it instead. So
yeah. I think as well, because we've sort of got used to it, it's easy to gloss over just how good St. Maximin was. If he'd been a new signing and that was his debut, can you imagine what the reaction would be? We'd be going out of our minds.
Well, there would have been penises helicoptered all over the stadium. It would have been.
That is all the game was missing. We had a dinosaur. We had Joe Linton kicking himself in the face. We just needed some helicopter, and it would have been a DVD worthy game.
I had a brief argument with a Newcastle friend of mine, and he's the kind of guy that when we had Robert didn't like him because he didn't track back, never took to, I don't know, Perez, never took, he'd always got to find somebody skillful that he just doesn't give a lot of credit to.
Is this
he
was complaining?
He was complaining that St. Maximum didn't pull the ball back. I think he had a couple of, certainly one in like the 91st minute or something for Bruno. He didn't pull the ball back and he took the shot himself. And he's like, he's so greedy and he does this all the time and all the rest of it. I was like, he's got an assist. He laid it on for Joe Linton to like side foot into an easy chance. He's laid it on. Yeah, I think his expected assists was something like 2 or 3. Now that's massive in a game. So I don't get the criticism of St. Maximum saying that he's a greedy player and all the rest of it, when he still creates more than any other player on our pitch.
Yeah.
And like genuine, all you've got to do is put it away. Like
I think there's games where that criticism has applied with him. But I think the only criticism that I had was, again, the sort of not going down too easily, but getting up too slowly, more in the first half. Mm. And I'm coming round to, all I can see is Andy Murray now. Because of Fergus, whenever St. Maximin's limping around.
But the second goal, yeah, Fraser's was good, but let's just take a moment to enjoy the third. I mean, at a point where I was starting to get like properly nervous.
Yeah.
Because they were beginning to get more into the game. And it actually came not long after one of their lads, I think it was Alan, who went through St. Maximum. Trippier didn't took offense to that, and just it set off like a brief period of about 30 seconds where every single opportunity we had, one of our lads just went fucking through theirs. Yeah. And it was like, all right, if you want to boil it down to a physical contest, we'll have yours. And then we go up the other end. Again, Alan takes out Fraser. And Trippier, to have that in his, oh man.
Yeah.
I'm tumescent.
And credit to Fraser as well for effectively what was the assist. We sort of talked a bit about where our goal threat's going to come from. And it feels like he's been getting better under Howe. And now that goal threat that he's had before at Bournemouth seems to be coming through. I'm excited, Dave.
There was a video of him being interviewed, I think, by the club. And he was talking, they asked him, like, oh, are you playing your best football? at the minute? Like, what do you put that down to? And he said that he refused to criticise the previous regime, but you could see on his face he was like, it's basically because Bruce is shit.
I think he also, to be fair, criticised himself and said I hadn't been playing well enough. But yeah, they're clearly working a lot harder. He said in that interview they're all, like, they're not being rested the day after that game. They're all in tomorrow or today, as it is. Yeah, today as it was yesterday. Fucking hell, what day is it?
But yeah, I think he's improved. I think, to be honest, I don't see anybody regressing under Howe except for St Maximum. But then this is on just off the back of St Maximum's by far his best game for Howe. Like, yeah. Everybody else seems to either be plateauing or improving. So I'm excited to see what comes next.
The only other one. I think as well, one player we've not mentioned who I think needs an honourable mention, Matt Target. You don't particularly notice, but just a properly solid left back. You kind of, you realise we've not had that when you see one play 90 minutes and it's like, oh, that's what's meant to happen. Why well, aren't the crosses just flying in?
Well, I didn't, yeah, so there was a couple of occasions where he stopped the cross at source and I was like, oh, yeah. That's what they're supposed
that's
to
the
do.
Thing.
But then, it, like you're saying, I didn't really notice him, not in the same way as I noticed Trippier, but that's because what he was doing was providing the platform from which St Maximum was able to attack. Like, St Maximum was much higher up the pitch than he has been in the past. And I think that Target was quite happy to win the ball and pass it on. I do think that he might get frustrated if St Maximum doesn't, like, consistently fails to pass him on the overlap, because Target did get past him a couple of times and was in a decent position for a cross and St Maximum cut inside. I think there needs to be an agreement that, like, all right, like, just one out of every five.
But I think with even an ordinary winger in front of him, you would say that's going to take a few games to work out an understanding. If it's possible to work out an understanding with St Maximin, which seems hard because he doesn't seem to know where he's going to go.
Then did you see so after the game, St Maximin, like, all, he must have been like doing it in the car on the way home or something. He tweeted out to an Everton fan who'd replied to him ages ago, like from fucking early January or something, had said, well, you're average or something like that. And St Maximum said that average was good enough tonight. It's like, I like that amount of that vinegar. I like that.
Good bit of pettiness. I don't think there's much more to say about that. I mean, we could talk about that game for another hour, but I think that would be stretching even our listeners' enjoyment of Newcastle. So I think we'll take a quick break. And
I was just going to say that it was the atmosphere at the ground was unreal. It's the best atmosphere I've heard in ages. And it was really nice to see Amanda Staveley fail to do a handshake. She did one of those, like, reach out when the person was going to fist bump, then go for a fist bump, and ended up just looking like rock, paper, scissors. It was fucking lovely to see that.
It's what we all follow the game for. It's what we grew up loving. That's what hopefully we'll see every game for the rest of the season. So we're going to take a quick break and then come back and answer your questions and look ahead to the Villa game. Welcome back to the Newcastle Natter. Good break, Dave.
Really nice. Thank you. Really, really lovely.
That's nice. Yeah.
Just did a bit of, like, soul searching and just calming exercises, breathing exercises, things like that. Just being in the moment.
I heard a piss.
Yeah, same thing.
We've all got our ways. We're going to move straight on to Twitter questions. John Tilly says, given how bad Everton were, who else do you think is going to get drawn into the relegation battle now if us and Norwich keep picking up points?
Well, I'll let you go first, if you like.
I think if us and Norwich keep picking up points, is maybe a stretch. It'll be intriguing to see if Norwich's form continues, because that's a little bit scary. I think Brentford are definitely getting sucked in the form they're in. Mm. Everton, you'd have to say, are sucked. Are Leeds, are they in there, would you say?
Well, I would say, so on the Brentford thing, I'd say that, because originally I was looking at them thinking, oh, they should be okay, but most of the teams below them have got at least two games in hand. Some, like, I think Burnley have three games in hand on them. So that 6-point cushion, it's not looking quite as fluffy as it did a few days, yeah, like a few weeks ago. What about Leeds? I think Leeds are safer than Brentford because, you know, Leeds are managed by Bielsa. Leeds have got big players to come back. I don't know when they're due back, but they are. As far as I know, Phillips isn't out for the season. I think he is due to come back at some point. So you've got these big players to come back, and Bielsa's a damn good coach. And, you know, they've got Bamford coming back, haven't they? And they've been missing a striker.
Yeah, I don't think they know when he's coming back. I think he's in a bit of a Callum Wilson situation.
Right.
The thing that worries me about Everton is playing them this week. They looked a lot like us in terms of, like, us at the start of the season. Their approach to the game looked not really up for it. And they've got a similar thing we had to when Bruce left us and when Rafa left them. They're trying to now implement a whole new attacking style, and we've seen how long it's taken for that to start bearing through under Howe. So
yeah,
I can't see them turning it around quickly.
I think the biggest issues for Everton are the players that they've brought in aren't necessarily what their side was lacking, because they had plenty of attacking talent like Townsend, Demarai Gray, Richarlison. You know, they've got talented attackers. What they needed was somebody to control the midfield, because I think Gomez and Allen were bossed by Joe Linton, Willock, and Shelvey. I think that Everton are in trouble, and the only way I can see them getting out of it is by players like Dele Alli just fancying it in a big game and you know, relying on their natural ability to get through games. I don't have a lot of faith in Lampard.
There's a spot, Dave. I'm going to take you off the fence and put you on the spot. Who's going down? Well, three names.
Well, I think Watford, definitely. I'd say Burnley and probably Norwich.
Yeah. I think I could see Burnley or Norwich being replaced by Brentford as well. Burnley now, because we've taken their out-of-form striker and given them 25 million to buy a much cheaper, seemingly better striker. Although that's harsh on Chris Wood. But he did have a decent game. But their new guy does look quite tasty.
He looks good, but then... I said it before that I don't think having a reliable striker was Burnley's problem. I think Burnley's problem is that they don't win a lot of games. And for all Weghorst is a good striker, I still think that they don't control the midfield. I think that they're vulnerable to teams who can pass it around. I think that they are, like, certainly they can be prone to, physicality.
I'm going to have to stop you. I don't care enough about Burnley to discuss, how they play.
Yeah. No.
Sean Morgan asks, what percentage of the last two wins are down to the opposition being awful versus Howe's training and philosophy taking hold? I think the Leeds one, we had a sort of immediate counter to that yesterday when we saw them drawing 3-3 with Villa. They're a defensively poor team, but they're not awful. And the fact we held them to a clean sheet, I would say, is fairly decent. What do you think?
I'd agree with that. To answer the question, I'd say that Howe's improvements to us have meant that we've been in a position to take advantage of teams who are playing poorly. Previously, under Stephen Bruce. We even against that, like that Leeds or that Everton side, I wouldn't have expected to see performances like we saw. So a bit of both. And I know he's asking for a percentage, so I'll say 60-40 in favour of Howe.
Wow. We do like our percentages on this pod, don't we?
How much do we like them? What percentage?
45-55 for me.
All right. I'm the other way.
What else have we got?
Well, I wanted to mention that...
Sorry, go for it, Dave.
I was just going to say that, like, what's really important in my head is that win. Not only did it take us out of the bottom three, but all the other teams around us kind of, like, I hope will remind our players that the rest of that group are shit. Like, the rest of those teams are shit. And we're shit, but we can win. And I hope that, like, gives them a bit of all those little soft victories, a good performance and a win. Like, it gives you, like, optimism, carries some momentum, two wins on the bounce for the first time this season. I think we're the only side in the bottom three or four to actually win two games on the spin. I think that the way that Norwich and Villa dropped 2 points rather than snatching 1 point will be damaging to their morale. So there's lots of things I can take from that win, not just the 3 points and the three goals.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's sort of the Leeds one, it felt like maybe we rode our luck a bit, but the Everton one, that was first half was tighter, but second half we were dominant. We hit the post as well. We could and should have had four.
So I think, the chance for Murphy, yeah.
Yeah.
The chance for Bruce, like, we didn't talk about.
Well, I think we'll probably come on to Bruno when we talk about. Actually, that might be a good time to get onto the Villa game, because we have had Chris Sugar at Sugar Wookie has asked, do we trust Shelvey to be able to contain Coutinho this weekend without bringing his axe out and getting a red card, or does Bruno start? This feels like the big selection question. Like, Bruno has to come in at some point. Do we change the system to bring him in, or does he just replace one of that three?
I think because Willock had his best game, Joe Linton had another decent game in that role. Shelvey, he was actually pretty decent defensively, but I would expect Bruno to be better than him.
Weirdly, yeah. Willock and Joe Linton both made far more tackles than Shelvey, even though Shelvey's playing at sort of that deep line role in front of the back four. But then Shelvey's the better passer of the three. It seems like skill set wise, Bruno feels like more of a replacement for Shelvey than either of the other two.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I would be tempted to introduce Bruno gently, partly because it's a new, you know, it's a new league.
You say that, Dave, but then let's look at what he did in 3 minutes against Everton. I think there was something, he made a key pass, quite a few tackles. He got a higher who scored rating than about five Everton players who played 90 minutes. Just with a three-minute cameo.
Yeah, I get that. But I also think there could be value in, like, keeping a winning side together as much as you can. But say it's like it's nil-nil and we're kind of labouring and we're not getting, you know, St Maximum's not getting any joy or whatever, and we're labouring. And then in the 50th, the 60th minute, then we bring on Bruno, lifts the entire crowd. There's this new bit of energy and all the rest of it. So, like, speaking from a mentality point of view, it might, because there'd be nothing wrong with Howe choosing as much as he can the side that beat Everton as a starting lineup. I think you can make a very strong argument for, like, we don't mess with a winning formula, and then introduce Gumieres earlier. The only player that he has to drop is Target, which is a concern.
I could see, I mean, Manquillo's cameo against Leeds makes me think I would rather have Manquillo covering at left back than Richie's probably the only other fit option, isn't he?
Yeah, and I wouldn't fancy Richie. I just wouldn't fancy him anymore.
No.
I think he's useful to have around the club, and maybe his utility, his versatility is useful off the bench, but no, I wouldn't want to start him.
I would have Manquillo and Trippier ahead of Richie at left back.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I think the only thing with Shelvey in terms of where Bruno comes in that position, you sort of deep line midfielder, it's one of those positions like centre back where you don't tend to get subbed off unless you're injured, because it's too pivotal to how you build up the game. But I think he has to start soon. I'd like to see him start against Villa, because I think he'd be a good upgrade on Shelvey. I think he'd be better in the position Joe Linton's playing than Joe Linton. I wouldn't want to see Willock drop, just because the improvement that's coming, we're going to need Willock to start getting goals to some degree. And he's he's more capable of that than Joe Linton. I think we can definitely agree.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that if you're going to drop anybody from the lineup for Bruno, it has to be, in my eyes, it has to be Shelvey. But I think you could get away with exactly the same starting lineup, and I'd be all right with that, because it makes sense. It's like, there is a very good reason why you're doing this, because you won the last game.
Yeah. Well, you even do 4-2-3-1 with Bruno and Shelvey at the base, and then Willock or Joe Linton and number 10.
Yeah, but I don't think either of the Joe Linton or Willock have done anything to deserve being... Oh, no way. Joe Linton kicked himself in the face with football.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
But I think as well, stats-wise, Joe Linton and Willock both had a better game than Shelvey. Shelby's been good. Shelvey also could easily have been sent off in that game. He still seems to have that in him. So I would feel safer with Bruno where Shelvey is. But I think it's one of the few times in his Newcastle career where dropping Jonjo Shelvey would feel harsh.
Yeah. And I've never been a massive Jonjo Shelvey fan.
You hate him.
I do.
I can't stand him.
Well, what he did to Harry Potter.
Go.
I'm sorry. That was a low-hanging fruit. Doubled it all up. Now I think the Villa game will be interesting, because apparently, well, they've definitely got Konsa out, and Coutinho was a doubt, but I think he's like 75% likely to play. And there was somebody else whose name I can't remember who it was, but there was somebody else that they might be missing. With Aston Villa, they haven't beaten us at St James's Park since 2005. So maybe we're a bit of a bogey ground for them.
I think it'll be another good atmosphere. I'm not feeling the same level of existential dread as I was in the build-up to the Everton game. Yeah. This feels like one where, because we've got those last two wins in the bag, you sort of think a draw or a loss and playing well will feel like there's still some kind of momentum. I think the worst thing would be just reverting back to how we were about five games ago, but there seems to be so much improvement across the board. I'm looking forward to a game of football. It's so weird. Up is down, black is white. It just doesn't, none of this makes sense.
But then we've got another weekend where quite a few of the other fixtures are like leaning to a position that we can take advantage of. Like Norwich are hosting Man City, so you'd expect Norwich not to get anything from the game. I know it's football and anything can happen. Burnley are at home to Liverpool. You've got who else? You've got Watford and Brighton. Well, that's 1-1 written all over it. Yeah. And then Everton and Leeds, which again, it could go either way. And Brentford, Crystal Palace. So you've got if Everton had Crystal Palace or Everton had Southampton or something, I could see like Everton getting back out of it. If Norwich had Crystal Palace or Southampton, you could see them making a case for... I mean, Norwich took a point off Crystal Palace or gave up. I mean, yeah. They nearly lost it. I mean, did you see Zaha's penalty?
No, I've heard about it.
Probably the worst penalty I've ever seen. Is absolute. I mean, he jokes about it afterward, but fuck me, it was terrible.
Norwich are picking up points. I don't feel like I can rely on Palace to do us any favours at the minute, because they seem a very hot and cold team who don't have a lot to play for already.
Yeah, but then
they're not on the beach, but they're on the bus to the beach.
You reckon?
Yeah,
and the coach has been driven by John Carver.
Yes.
I don't know. I think this is a weekend. Like, if we could get another 3 points, I think we could find ourselves in a position where all the other teams around us, like none of the other teams around us, sorry, pick up a win, and that could mean that our 1 point gap on the relegation zone stretches to 4 or stretches to, you know, 2 or 3, like whatever.
Yeah,
I fancy. A win could be, it could be like the, not the straw that broke the camel's back. I can't think of a good idiom, but like it could be
dead
good.
It could burst the dam.
Yes.
But I think as well, controversially, I'd like us to win as well. I think it would be good. I'd like to see us win this game.
Where are your morals now, you fucking hypocrite?
I did feel a bit pathetic getting outraged at Kurt Zouma kicking a cat, considering my own moral situation with fucking Yemen at the minute. But
did you see? And this is murky waters for two like white middle class men to wade into. But did you see Mikhail Antonio's car window interview?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Again, I'm not sure
we should talk about it.
No, I don't mind.
No.
I think there was a valid point in what he was
trying
making,
to make, yeah.
But it's a point that no one's ever going to hear, because they're just going to be like, why are you making this point? The man drop-kicked a cat and you're trying to make it about racism. But I think he had a legitimate point about moral outrage. But I don't think that's unique to Premier League footballers. I think Britain as a nation, when it comes to animal cruelty, holds that a lot higher than human cruelty if it's something we can't see and it's across the world, or it's people who live in sand, we suddenly don't give a shit. That's the sort of horrible truth of it.
Well, like Jawas.
Yes. So that's all the big issues covered, I think. What's your prediction for Sunday?
Oh, for all I think it would be amazing, I'm going to go for a 1-1. I just think that we can't have nice things.
I think we can have nice things. And I think we're going to have nice things. I'm going to go 2-0.
I would eat that slice of pie happily. Very happily.
I don't believe it, but I'd like it to happen.
I think Fergus would, because of the overall positivity around the club right now, he would predict a 2-0 loss. Just to, you know.
I think all the natty usual 1-1.
Hmm.
But
am I just saying 1-1 because I don't want to jinx it? Or do I actually think it's going to be... No, I think it's going to be a draw. I think it's going to be a draw.
I think it's. I think the point that was made earlier on Twitter is a good one. I would much rather see an untested Bruno shackling Coutinho than Jonjo Shelvey.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, that's fair.
And I think we will. I think Bruno will start. I don't know if it'll be in place of Shelvey, Joe Linton or Willock. But I'm excited. I'm not scared of football. I think if we lose, it's not going to ruin the weekend and the following.
I think
for
the first time in ages, we've got a right back of genuine quality. We've got like we didn't even see Dan Byrne, so we don't know if he's going to start against Villa. We've got like a central midfielder that everybody's spaffing in their pants about. We've got an attacking midfielder who is one of the most I don't know, dangerous players in the Premier League, because you don't know what he's going to do.
You don't know which part of his body he's going to hit with his shots.
But we've got, like, throughout the squad now, I think we've got a lot more quality.
Yeah. And suddenly Ryan Fraser feels like
better.
Someone who can chip in with goals and assists.
Yeah. And it feels weird to be like this positive. I still don't think it's really sunk in yet.
No. And it might take, we could get hammered 4-0 and be back in the relegation zone and suddenly think, oh shit, it's back to this again. But I think if you can't enjoy a 3-1 victory over Everton and Jordan Pickford getting taunted by a man in a dinosaur suit, then you can't enjoy life. And I pity you.
Yeah.
I think that's everything.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else that we need to cover. Oh,
well, hopefully Fergus getting moved. Oh, yeah, Shearer's statue is getting moved back into the ground, isn't it? Or onto club land.
Yeah.
That's good, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Again, if Fergus was here, he's anti like statues and flags and those kind of things. So he'd be, I don't know, grumpy about it. But I think it's quite nice. I think we get more statues.
But I think as well, it's like a statue's being moved from somewhere to somewhere else.
Somewhere close to the ground to somewhere on the grounds. Like
on the Dave Watson rip your cock offometer, it's not even take your belt off.
No.
Level of excitement. I think we can wrap it up there. So thank you very much, Dave Watson.
Cheers, Paul. I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you. Don't get this for Fergus. Jeez, I appreciate you too, Dave.
Thanks, man.
Let's hug. Right, thank you to you, the Natter listener. Oh, this is awkward now. Thank you to you, the Natter listener. I like you too. I like spending time with you too, actually. And goodbye.
Bye-bye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.